what I just told you in slightly less detail with slightly fewer affirmations.
We can't be going about antagonizing the nobles, Granny. Not now. And especially not Claremont. Antane and his marines are practically the Count's bodyguards. And if word gets around to the other nobles that we're trying to strong-arm the Count or threatening his children, well, we need their support right now, is what I'm saying.
I understand entirely, sir, but as I said, this is just misunderstanding and rumor.
Then you won't mind apologizing to the Count of Claremont personally.
Excuse me, sir?
I've invited the Count this morning to a small meeting. More of drinks and a chat, really, at Weatherfair.
That would be the Duke's getaway palace, not far outside the city.
You and me and him. There, you'll explain the entire situation to him and apologize to him.
Sir, for what?
As I said, this is entirely a misunderstanding. Then you'll apologize for the misunderstanding. Granny, it doesn't matter whether you actually have anything to apologize for. The act of apologizing is the thing. You should know that already. That's basic diplomacy.
The meeting will just be the three of us.
Yes, I think that's best. No need to make a spectacle about it. The word will get out anyway.
The Lady Vrenna will not be there.
The Count's daughter?
No.
Why?
Just checking.
We could invite her if you like.
I'd rather not.
Then I'll see you in a few hours. Dress casually. Practice groveling.
The Duke disconnected.
And that was point 8.
So, to recap. People wanted Granny dead, or at least seriously injured. His plans to maneuver himself to a dukedom through fomenting a revolution were falling apart at a rapidly accelerating rate. And in a few hours, he'd have to feign regret for an incident he'd have to maintain it never happened, even though it had, and Granny had absolutely no regrets doing it, save that it didn't go to plan. Unless something miraculous happened in short order, Granny would be dead or in jail, and the House of Nohama Peten legally on the hook of his actions. The worst of it was, none of this was originally his idea. By the time they were all in their teenage years, it was clear to anyone who cared to look that each of the Nohama Peten scions had a certain leading characteristic. Amit was the conventional one. Unoriginal, unthreatening, but always ready to be out front for family and house. A tractable figurehead who would one day publicly take the reins of the House of Nohama Peten. Granny was the useful one, the one good with people, the salesman, or the confidence man, the one who could intrigue you with an idea and get you to sign your name on the line, whether or not you really understood what you were buying. But it was Nadashe, the sister, who was the brains of the operation. She was the one who told the figurehead what to say and pointed the salesman at the mark and set into motion the plans that would take years or even decades to come to their fruition. As she did that first night when the siblings were all gathered in Xi'an to celebrate the birthday of Renared Wu, the crown prince whom Nadashe had so recently begun negotiations with in regards to a marriage. "He's a prick," Granny had said to his sister after the three of them had departed the festivities and decamped to the Nohama Peten apartments, not too far from the Imperial Palace. "I kind of like him," Amit replied.
Amit was lounged on a chaise, a glass of Nohama Peten Shiraz in his hand. The Shiraz was contraband, or would be if anyone other than the Nohama Petens themselves were to drink it. The House of Patrick owned the monopoly on grapes and all their products. But when the interdependency was formed, and the monopolies parceled out, the existing Nohama Peten grape stock was grandfathered in for the family's private use only. The house's famous Shiraz, acknowledged to be one of the finest outside the now lost environs of Earth, was now accessible only if one was a Nohama Peten. or one of their guests, for a small private party, or perhaps even something more intimate. It was not unheard of for especially fervent enophiles to proposition Nohama Petans on the chance there might be a particularly vintage bottle in the offing. "You would," Granny said. From his point of view, Renarin Wu and his brother were cut out of the same boring playboyish cloth. Granny didn't dislike Amit, nor did Amit dislike Granny. But in their adult years, they didn't spend all that much time with each other. They both had friends who were more suitably interesting to each of them. Granny didn't spend that much time with his sister, either, although not for lack of interest. It's just that Nadashe had plans. When they involved Granny, he saw her. When they didn't, he didn't. The fact that she had dragged them both back to her apartments, minus their escorts for the evening, meant that her plans involved them in some way. But she wasn't telling them what they were yet, so Granny decided to needle her just for fun. "And what's your excuse, Nada? Why are you consorting with that stiff Renarid?" Nadashe, standing behind Amit's chaise, reached over and took her brother's wine glass from him and took a swig. Amit protested mildly, but shut up when it was returned to him.
"You mean, aside from the fact that one day he will be emperor and that allying with the imperial house will give our family an unassailable position among the guilds, and that one of my children will be the next emperor, forever embedding our interests into the fabric of the interdependency?"
"Yes," Granny said. "Besides that,
he's an acceptable dancer."
"Well," Granny said, looking over to his brother, who rolled his eyes, "that's something."
"There's also another reason, which is why I brought the two of you here tonight."
She took the glass from Amit again. "Stop that," Amit said.
"No,"
Nadashe said, and walked the glass over to the bar.
"I need you sober for this part. You'll get the glass back when I'm done."
"I already don't like whatever this is," Amit said. "What's going on, Nada?" Granny asked.
"Just the future," Nadashe replied,
and then told the house computer to dim the lights and bring a presentation on a monitor. The presentation contained a map of the interdependency, with the major flow streams highlighted, all centering on Hub.
"This is the future?" Amit asked. "This is the present," Nadashe said.
Then she snapped her fingers, and the map changed. Not the star systems of the interdependency, but the flow streams, which rearranged themselves drastically in some cases. Most notably, the space around Hub, previously crowded with the inward and outgoing vectors of the flow, was now populated by only three streams, two incoming and one outgoing. A different system was now the hub of the majority of flow streams, its space crowded with the representations of the traffic going in and going out. It was end.
"This is the future," Nadashe said.
Granny got up and walked closer to the monitor, studying the new map.
"Where did you get this?"
"I have a friend from university who grew up to be a flow physicist," she said. "My friend was casting about for something to do her doctoral thesis on, and she came across a monograph about a potential long-term shift in the flow. The person who wrote the monograph never did anything with it. She tracked down his information, and he'd become a tax collector for the interdependency. So she followed up, worked the data, and came to the conclusion that, after more than 1,000 years of relative stability, the flow streams are about to shift, probably to this map."
"When?" Amit asked.
"She says the data indicate it's already starting. First slowly, but then quicker and quicker. It'll probably start in the next decade.
Nadashe pointed at the monitor.
This map is likely to be what the interdependency looks like in 30 years, she says.
Grenny furrowed his brow.
Likely. What does that mean? She's modeling what she sees as the most probable pattern of collapses and shifts based on her data set. She says this pattern has an 85% probability of being what things will be once the pattern stabilizes. And when it stabilizes, it'll likely hold for another 1,000 years.
Grenny pointed.
And she's sure End is going to be the place all those streams are going to focus on.
Nadashe nodded.
She says that's actually the most predictable part of the shift. It's happened before, apparently, the shift of the flow streams. Her data suggests the locus of the flow activity switches off between hub and end every 1,000 or 2,000 years. There's a less than 1 chance in 100,000 that some other system will be the focus of the flow streams.
All right, but so what? Amit said.
So whoever controls the system the flow streams are focused in controls the interdependency, Grenny said.
At least one brother is paying attention,
Nadashe said, smiling.
But we don't control that system, Amit pointed out. We're in the Terhatum system.
That's the present,
Nadashe said, and then pointed again at the monitor.
This is the future.
There's already a Duke of End, Grenny told his sister.
There is one, she agreed.
But historically, they don't stick around very long. They get deposed often enough that when there's yet another rebellion, the interdependency's policy is to let them fight it out and then pass on the dukedom to whoever's left standing.
You want to depose the current Duke?
No, I want you to depose him, Grenny.
What? Why me?
Because Amit's busy preparing to take over the family business, and I'm busy trying to merge our line with the Emperor's. You're the only one not currently busy.
I'm busy, Grenny said, and he was.
He was a vice president of marketing for the house, which was a suitable position for him, given his age and work experience. After a certain point in time, he'd leave that position to become part of the house board of directors, and he'd have the option of coasting, just as third children of all the major houses did.
But you're not that busy. And besides, if we put you in charge of our interests on End, that would be a promotion, which would look good for you, and is a natural progression in your career.
But it's on End.
And?
There's nothing on End. That's why it's called End.
The future is on End, Grenny. We're going to need you there so we can be ready when it happens.
You're already planning to marry into the Imperial House, Nada, Amit said. If you're going to do that, then why do we even need Grenny on End?
You want to answer that one?
Nadashe asked Grenny.
Because whoever is running End will be in a good position to challenge the Emperor for power, Grenny said to his brother.
The whole reason the House of Wu is the Imperial House is because they control the space around Hub. You can't dip a toe into it without paying tolls and tariffs and taxes. If that all shifts to End, one of the Emperor's biggest revenue sources dries up.
We marry into the House of Wu to get power now,
Nadashe continued.
We secure End to stay in power when things shift. And if our families hold both Hub and End, we'll keep the interdependency from falling apart in a civil war.
Which would be bad for business, Amit concluded.
Everyone's, including ours. Grenny looked at the monitor again.
You want to risk a lot on a doctoral thesis, sis.
Nadashe shrugged.
Worst case scenario. We're wrong about the shift. The result is you're Duke of End, and I'm the Imperial Consort.
Actually, the worst case scenario is you don't marry Renarid,
and Grenny is arrested for treason, and the shift happens anyway, Amit pointed out.
You're not helping, Grenny said to his brother. I'm just making sure we're clear on what the failure states are, Amit replied. I know you two think I'm not as smart as either of you, and you're right, I'm not. But I'm smart enough to know this plan of yours, Nadashe, has a lot of risk and a more than minor chance of failure. If this is going to work, you're going to need me to keep feathers unruffled with the house board.
Only if we tell them, Nadashe said.
Amit snorted. You want to run a planetary coup, clandestinely, out of the house of Nohamapitan?
Why not? Use local funds. It's end. We can keep the expenditures off the books for years if we have to. And if we're smart about it, we don't have to tell the board until after it's done.
Oh, dear, Amit said and got up from the chaise. I actually am going to need a drink for this. He went to the bar.
We keep it quiet, just between us.
Even with local funds, we won't be able to keep this quiet, Grenny said. Especially if we are running the rebellion.
This is a place where some or another group revolts against the sitting duke a couple of times a decade, Nadashe pointed out. You don't have to run it. You find one that's already running.
And do you think the current duke will somehow sit still for this?
Depends on whether he figures out you're involved. If you make yourself useful to him, he might not.
Lots of moving parts on this one, Amit said from the bar.
He's not wrong, Grenny agreed.
He pointed to the monitor, with the map still open. And there's no guarantee your physicist friend isn't a complete fraud. Why isn't this actual news, Nadashe? You'd think this would be something people might be concerned about. The fact I've never heard of this before suggests to me there's less here than meets the eye.
She came to me with it exclusively, Nadashe said.
Why did she do that?
She needed money, and she thought this would be something she could trade for it. I paid her way through the rest of her doctoral thesis, not on this, and she worked on this for me.
Who is she?
She's a friend of mine from university. I told you this already.
Does she have a name?
Hatid Roynald.
Did I meet her? Nadashe snorted at this.
No. As difficult as it may be for you to accept this, Grenny, you didn't manage to meet and have sex with all of my university friends.
This data she has for you isn't peer-reviewed, Amit asked. His glass was full of Shiraz again.
No, obviously we didn't want it leaked. I think she may have at some point tried to correspond with the tax collector whose work she was following up on, but I don't think anything came of that.
So, except for a minor imperial bureaucrat who may or may not know anything but clearly doesn't care, literally no one else knows anything about this, Nadashe nodded. Well, Amit said, if nothing else, no one will see this coming. So now you want to do this? Grenny asked his brother. I didn't say I want to do this, Amit said. This is a high-risk, high-reward investment, which is the most polite way I can think of to describe this crackpot scheme. I don't like risk, and we already have a Monopoly franchise, so we already have a reward. He motioned toward the monitor. But if this has any chance of being true, then there's also a risk of the interdependency collapsing in on itself if we do nothing. And that's a some-risk, high-penalty scenario. I have to decide whether I want that less than I want this.
We can make it work, Nadashe said.
By which you mean, I will have to make it work, Grenny said. I'll be months away from you.
We can plan it out before you leave.
All those plans will mean nothing when they hit the real world.
Then improvise. Gain people's confidence. Keep them in the dark about your true intentions. You're good at that.
Yes, Granny agreed.
But that'll only get me so far.
You'll figure out the rest.
Nadashe walked over and patted her brother on the cheek.
And when you don't know what to do next, just come out firing. It couldn't hurt.
Actually, it could hurt a lot, Amit said. He poured himself some more Shiraz.
Be bold, Nadashe said, ignoring Amit. Be bold, Granny. And then be Duke of End.
Nadashe didn't convince either Amit or Granny that night. Too many questions and too many ways the three of them would end up in very small prison cells for the rest of their lives for treason, fraud, and terrorism. But the question was when, not if, Nadashe would bring them around with her plans and her persuasions. Within a month, she had her brothers agreeing in principle with the idea. A month after that, Granny, still not entirely believing he was signing on to this harebrained scheme, was on the Nohamapeton Fiver some nerve, heading toward End. In retrospect, his part of the scheme had gone surprisingly well. There was indeed an affronted group ready to take on the Duke of End that he could funnel money and weapons to in exchange for their doing all the work of the rebellion. He'd quickly ingratiated himself into the inner circle of the Duke of End, who, despite the proud title, was a provincial rube, whose own father came to power by overthrowing the former duke, and who was deeply impressed with Granny, whose family could trace its noble origins back to before the founding of the interdependency. In a few short months, the rebellion went into overdrive, and he was the duke's confidant and political hatchet man, and in a position to undermine his patron quietly while preparing the way for his own inevitable ascendance when the duke's head rolled into the dust. Certainly he was doing better on his end of the plan than Nadashe was doing on hers, although that wasn't entirely her fault. As far as Granny knew, she had nothing to do with Renarid smashing into that wall. At least if she had, she'd kept him out of it. But now it was all crashing down, and Granny sensed he was within days, if not hours, of disgrace and discovery, which was not only a danger to him, but to the entire house of Nohamapeton. It was one thing to fuck up on your own time. It was another to sideswipe the house while you did it. Be bold, Nadashe had said to him. And then be Duke of End. Granny smiled at this memory and tried to imagine what his sister would do in his shoes. Then, with less than 2 hours left before he had to present himself to the Duke of End and the Count of Clermont, he set about doing that. The Duke and the Count and Granny spent an hour having a high tea on Weatherfair's eastern outside gallery, the one with a spectacular view of the city, talking about utterly inconsequential things. Granny could see this took some effort on the part of the Count, because he clearly thought Granny had kidnapped and intended to torture his son. Then the three went into the Duke's private office to be alone, while they talked about consequential things not relating to Granny kidnapping and intending to torture the Count's son, and that took another hour or so. Then the Duke signaled it was time to do the apology thing. Granny nodded, stood up, positioned himself between the Count in his chair and the Duke behind his desk. He took a deep breath that seemed to hint at the difficulty he was going to have saying the words that would follow. He then reached into his right interior jacket pocket, where he'd secreted a small bolt thrower, and shot the Count with it, stunning him into unconsciousness. "Granny, what the hell are you do?" the Duke began, and then stopped, because one of his lungs had a hole in it, put there by the small pistol that Granny had produced from his left interior jacket pocket and fired at him after dropping the bolt thrower to the floor to free his hands for the new weapon. The Duke barely had time to look at the entry wound and then back up at Granny in confusion before he died
from the bullet Granny shot into his face. The bullet entered just below the Duke's right eye and then scored through his brain, settling, its velocity spent, into the rear interior of the Duke's skull. Granny very quickly pulled out a handkerchief, rubbed his prints off the pistol, and placed it into the hand of the unconscious Count. He made sure to get the Count's prints on the grip and trigger. Then he picked up the bolt thrower, rubbed it off as well, and got the Duke's prints on it, then let it drop to the floor where it naturally would have. He opened the drawer on the Duke's desk where it would be logical for the noble to have placed a bolt thrower for personal protection. Then Granny ran for the door of the office and opened it just as the Duke's staff and security people, having heard the shots, reached the other side of it. "They shot each other!" is all Granny said before the staff and security people barreled through the entrance. Granny collapsed by the door, feigning shock, and faked hyperventilating. It didn't matter. No one was paying attention to him because there was the far more serious issue of a dead Duke in the room, which was fine with Granny. He didn't want anyone paying attention to him. He wanted all their attention on the Duke and the Count. He wanted everyone in the room to see the obvious. The Count had pulled a small pistol. The Duke had pulled the bolt thrower set to stun, and then someone shot first and everything went to hell, and now one was dead and the other was out like a light. The more others saw that, and by now the room was jammed with staff, the more that their eyes would allow their brains to believe the story Granny was going to tell. "The Duke had called me to apologize to the Count," Granny said to Sir Antoine Mount some time later. The imperial bureaucrat had gotten involved because the assassination of a sitting duke by a sitting count was an imperial problem, even if it was the Duke of End, whom Sir Antoine had previously been content to let hang if the rebels ever got hold of him. The two of them were alone in the hospital morgue with the body of the Duke laid out on a slab before them. "This would have been for kidnapping his son," Mount said. "Allegedly kidnapping," Granny said. "And I did apologize, although not for kidnapping Mars Claremont, which I did not do. I apologized instead for having a heated conversation with the Count's son, from which this misunderstanding arose." "How did the Count take it?" Granny motioned to the mortuary slab. "He was not convinced." "Why didn't the Count shoot you, Lord Granny?" "Sir?" "You are the one he alleges kidnapped his son. You are the more logical target for his rage, and you were literally right in his sights." "The Count thought I did it at the behest of the Duke. At least that's what he said before the shooting started."
"And he thought that why?"
"Because the Duke had sent me to see the Count a few days earlier to try to convince the Count to illegally divert imperial funds to him, in order to pay for weapons pirates had stolen and were ransoming. The Count said no, as he should have, so naturally the Count assumed the Duke also assigned me to this alleged kidnapping to apply pressure."
"But you did speak to the young Claremont on the Duke's account?"
"Yes."
Granny noted Mount's apparent acceptance of his spin on the kidnapping, but obviously said nothing about it.
"The Duke was aware I didn't approve of his plan to borrow the funds, but I still asked, because he was my Duke."
"Still odd he wouldn't try for you as well."
"Perhaps he planned to. But then there was the Duke's bolt thrower." "I don't think he was expecting the Duke to have that."
"No," Mount agreed. "The head of the Duke's security detail was surprised by it too. Said to me the Duke didn't generally like or carry weapons. He left that to his bodyguards."
"The Duke was probably being prudent. He knew the Count was upset with him."
"Yes. But where did he get the bolt thrower? His security people said they'd never seen it before."
Granny allowed himself to look uncomfortable.
"Yes, Lord Granny?"
Mount pressed. "It's mine, and I lent it to him," Granny said. "I bought it a while ago when things started getting bad with the rebellion."
"You have your own security people?"
"I don't have them with me all the time.
The Duke was aware I had it. I never carried it around him for obvious reasons. So he asked me to bring it for the meeting, for his own safety. He could have just had his security attend the meeting, or have his people frisk the Count when he arrived. I think he thought either would just enrage the Count more. The meeting was supposed to repair the wound between them. That's why he chose to have the meeting at Weatherfair. A private residence, rather than the public office. A friendly meeting, not a formal one. Mount looked back at the slab. It appears the Duke miscalculated.
What are you going to do about the Count of Clermont? Granny asked.
For now he's upstairs in a private room with six of my marines around him. He's still out of it. I don't imagine when he wakes up he'll tell me the same story you just did, will he?
I couldn't say, Granny said. I know he's still angry with me. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to suggest I was involved in some way.
Other than lending the Duke my bolt thrower, I mean. He wouldn't know about that.
Is there a recording from the office?
Mount shook his head. Security tells me the Duke didn't have any of that at Weatherfair. He called it his place of refuge, whatever that means.
Granny nodded, as if he didn't know Weatherfair had no real security measures.
The next Duke will know better, he said.
Whoever that is, Mount motioned to the slab. This one has no heirs and no close family, and the Duke's prenup with the Duchess specifies she cannot inherit. Apparently there were trust issues there.
Isn't there a protocol? As the Emperor's representative, you'd have to approve whomever claimed the title, yes?
In the absence of a direct heir, I'd be the one to appoint an acting Duke, yes. My recommendation would still have to be approved by the Emperor, of course. My first inclination would simply be to pass it along to the next highest-ranking noble, which, in this case, would be the Count of Clermont.
That wouldn't be the best idea under the circumstances, Granny said.
No, it would not. There are a few other counts and barons who I would have found acceptable, but some of them have fled the planet and the others are either currently hiding or have allied themselves with the rebels, which makes them untenable. For now, anyway.
What if the rebel leader presents herself? Livy Onston, their general.
Mount snorted. I'm not going to appoint her just because the Duke died and now she doesn't have to overthrow him. They are still in rebellion. You don't win a rebellion by default.
Granny made himself look thoughtful and silent and waited for Mount to notice.
What is it? Mount finally said.
This wasn't something I was supposed to talk about. Granny made himself talk haltingly. For the last few months, the Duke has quietly had me treating with the rebels to find out if there's a way out of this mess. Their resources are stretched thin, and so are ours. Both our sides are looking for an acceptable way out. But now the Duke is dead, the rebels will want the ducal throne. If we don't act quickly, the rebellion will fracture into competing factions of leaders claiming the dukedom for themselves, which will make it worse for everyone else on end.
What do you suggest, then? That I do make this Onston woman the Duke?
Granny shook his head.
Has the Duke's death made the news yet?
No, Mount said. For the moment, all anyone knows is that the Count of Clermont is upstairs. They don't know he, Mount pointed at the Duke, is down here. That won't last, though.
I can reach Onston as soon as you and I stop talking. Let me offer her an immediate truce. Acceptance of several of the rebels' political goals, and a title for her.
Which title?
Countess.
Of Clermont? Mount said sarcastically.
Possibly, if it becomes vacant after a trial. But she said several counts have fled. Give her one of those vacant titles. Lesser titles for her lieutenants. A general amnesty for her fighters. We can end this now, with a single call.
That's a lot for a single call to do, Mount observed.
It's not the call. It's the months of work before it, Granny said.
Her people and I already have most of this hammered out in principle. This would just be us implementing it.
And if Arnston doesn't agree?
Then I tell her the Imperial Marines are stepping in.
Mount stiffened. We have no intention of doing that, Lord Grenny.
Of course not. But she doesn't have to know that. And it makes fine leverage.
I'll be saying, have everything you want, or the interdependency will crush you. It's motivation to act.
You confident you can do this?
I think it's the best chance we have right now, and the best chance we'll have for a long time.
Mount nodded. Do it.
The thing is, Sir Ontaine, I don't have the formal power to do any of this, yet.
Grenny waited for Mount to figure out what he was saying, which didn't take long because Mount wasn't stupid. Then Grenny had to wait while Mount weighed everything that had just happened in his head. He watched as micro-expressions flashed across Mount's face, the realization that Grenny had basically walked him into a trap where Mount would have to give him what he wanted. Irritation that he'd been that easily maneuvered. Suspicion that Grenny might have orchestrated the assassination outright for this very purpose. Veiled admiration, if that was in fact the case. Recognition that this rebellion was a goddamn stupid mess, and that the sooner it was over, by whatever means, the better off everyone would be. Resignation that this sneaky little Nohama Peton was probably the best chance Mount had to get this whole shit show off his hands quickly. Grenny knew Mount was going to offer him the dukedom probably a few hundredths of a second before Mount did.
All right, Lord Grenny, Mount said. Get a ceasefire in the next hour, and a truce in the next 24, and you're acting Duke. I'll start the paperwork for the recommendation to make it stick. But I want to be clear with you about this, my young friend. If I discover that the assassination of the Duke is in any way different than how you've related it to me here, your dukedom is going to be a 3-meter by 3-meter cell for the rest of your natural life. And I will make it my personal business to assure you live a very long life indeed. Are we clear?
Of course, Sir Ontaine.
Then congratulations, Lord Grenny, Provisional Duke of End. Get to work.
Mount strode out of the morgue. Grenny suppressed the urge to pump his fists in joy. 1 hour later, he'd secured the ceasefire and dispatched people to get to work on the treaty. He hadn't had to threaten General Arnston with the Imperial Marines, of course. She was working for him anyway. 2 hours later, he'd informed Captain Wimson of the Red Rose that payment for the ship damages and the weapons would be forthcoming, pending Grenny's formal installation as acting Duke, so please be patient and don't have him murdered. 3 hours later, the new acting Duke of End was informed that the Count of Clermont was awake and cognizant. Grenny decided to pay him a visit and ordered everyone, including the 6 Imperial Marines, to wait on the other side of the door. They complied, although not happily. Grenny took the chair in the corner of the room and sat it next to the hospital bed so he could talk very quietly to the Count.
"I'm the Duke of End now," he said to the Count.
"Congratulations," the Count said after a moment. There was a distinct lack of enthusiasm in his voice. Nevertheless, Grenny nodded.
"Thank you. Now, here's the thing. You and I need to get our stories straight. The story is, you assassinated the Duke for ordering me to kidnap your son. You two had an argument. You pulled your pistol. He pulled a bolt thrower. You don't remember anything after that, because the stun bolt messed with your memory.
You want me to confess to murder?"
"Yes. Yes, I do."
"Not a great plan you have, Lord Grenny." Grenny ignored the Count's refusal to upgrade his title.
"Here's what I'll give you in return. You'll be sentenced for the murder, but I'll allow you to serve your sentence under house arrest at Clermont. You'll abdicate your title, and I'll make sure it goes to your daughter rather than it being taken from you in disgrace. You'll give up your job as Imperial Auditor, and I'll install someone of my choosing in that role. But I'll make sure you keep your pension,
and I'll add a stipend to it to keep up your residence. You keep your mouth shut about everything, to everyone, including your daughter. Oh, also, you tell her not to try to murder me in the night. The Count snorted at this. Granny pressed on. If you agree to everything, in 5 years, I'll pardon you. I'll say that the late Duke had threatened you and your family to such an extent you felt you had no choice. You were under extreme duress. And since I was there for all of it, I'm in a position to confirm that. So, that's it. Confess, 5 years at home, and then a pardon.
The Count laughed weakly.
Why are you laughing? Granny demanded.
Lord Granny, you have no idea what's coming in the next 5 years, the Count said.
On the contrary, Claremont, I do. Changes are coming. End is going to become the heart of the interdependency. All paths will lead to here.
No. No paths will lead to here. In 5 years, we'll be alone. It's a physical certainty.
Granny began to feel uncomfortable and realized it was the Count's last sentence that did it.
What do you mean?
Why do you think I sent my son away, Lord Granny, at this specific time?
To escape the fighting here,
and to complain to the Emperor about me kidnapping him. The latter was why Granny wanted Marse out of the way if he couldn't be retrieved. Granny wasn't sure how much pull the Count of Claremont had at the Imperial Court, but he knew Nadashe and Amit wouldn't appreciate a report from End about his actions making their lives harder. The Count shook his head.
I had him leave now because if he didn't, it would be impossible for him to ever leave.
Granny was puzzled.
Are you talking about the flow stream? What would an Imperial auditor know about flow streams? The Count's specialty was taxes, not fizz.
Oh, my God, Granny said, and openly stared at the Count.
You're him.
The Count of Claremont seemed puzzled, but amused.
Who am I, Lord Granny?
You're him. The flow physicist. The one whose work Hatid Roynald based hers off of.
Claremont continued to look puzzled for a moment, but then Granny saw a sort of slow realization come over his face.
I know that name. I remember that name. She sent me some of her work and a list of questions years ago.
And you didn't respond?
No, I didn't. I had been ordered by the Emperor not to discuss my work with anyone.
Another expression popped onto Claremont's face then. Concern.
You think our work is accurate, don't you? You think the flow streams are moving to End. That's it, isn't it?
Granny's mouth gaped. Claremont slapped the side of his bed.
That is it! That's actually it!
Claremont started laughing. A loud, almost agitated noise. One of the Marines opened the door and poked a head in to investigate. Granny angrily waved him away. Eventually, Claremont got control of himself, wiped a tear away from his eye, and looked at Granny.
Oh, you sad, ambitious fool, he said.
What do you know? Granny asked.
I know that Hatid Roynald was sloppy with her math. I know if she didn't check some of her base assumptions, she's probably iterating wildly away in a direction that has no basis in reality. Has any of her work you've seen had peer review?
No, Granny said.
Claremont nodded.
Of course not. She's like me, snapped up by a patron and working alone. Peer review is important, Lord Granny. Until Marse was old enough to start checking my work, I was flying blind. Made some stupid mistakes I just didn't see. Roynald was making them too. I know, I saw them. She probably never corrected them.
Claremont leaned forward and weakly poked Granny in the chest.
And you ignorant, grasping poltroon, you didn't know any better.
Granny actually flinched from the poke.
"What are you saying?" he asked.
Claremont smiled and then lay back into his bed.
"What I'm saying is nothing, Lord Granny. Not until you decide to send a report back to your house, detailing your sudden ascendance to the dukedom. You are going to be doing that, yes?"
"I am." The report would go out on a mail drone, a small, unmanned craft that floated in space right outside a flow shoal, onto which electronic communication, personal letters and pictures, business communications, reports, intellectual property that could be digitized, was recorded. Once a day, one of these drones headed into the flow with its stash of information. Once a day, a drone appeared out of the flow, with letters, communication, IP, and so on to transmit to End. The mail was always late because End was far away from everything, but it always arrived. Claremont nodded again.
"File your report. Send it. And then, when it happens, you come back to me, and I'll tell you my terms."
"When what happens?"
"You'll know it."
"And what terms do you think you'll be able to dictate?"
"I'd like not to have a murder on my record, for starters. After that, we'll see. But I'll tell you this, Lord Granny. You have this all wrong. I don't need you. You, on the other hand, might need me. More than you know. So go write your report. I'll stay quiet until you get back."
Claremont actually made shooing motions, dismissing Granny. More out of bemusement than anything, he left. Granny went to his office at the House of Nohama Peaton building. It would take a while to move his concerns into the ducal palace, a thought that sent a thrill down his spine, and composed his report to Nadashe. The report was both in code and encrypted. Then he sent it on a secure beam to the mail drone and waited for a receipt that it had been. The receipt came minutes later, along with the timer for the departure of the drone, which would be on its way in under half an hour. Granny noted the receipt and then busied himself with other work, primarily fielding reports from the team writing up the truce with the rebels. This was involved enough that it wasn't until 3 hours later that he noticed he'd received an additional note from the mail service, informing him that his mail would not be delivered on time. The reason was drone failure, which meant the drone was defective in some way. The information in the drone, including his report, would be transferred to a different drone. There were dozens parked out near the flow shoal, and then sent through. Granny noted this and was about to click through when he noticed two other reports of delays due to material failure. As he read the third one, a fourth entered into his queue. Granny pinged his assistant. "What's going on with the mail drones?" he said.
"I don't know, sir," was the reply. "Everyone's complaining about it. All the mail is bouncing from one drone to another."
Before Granny could respond to this, his tablet pinged to let him know Sir Antane Mount was trying to reach him. He disconnected from his assistant without acknowledgement and hailed Mount.
"We seem to have a problem," Mount said.
"With the treaty discussions?" Granny asked.
"No, something else. A fiver named Because I Said So just reported into Imperial Station. It was about to translate into the flow."
"Is there a problem with the ship?"
"The ship is fine. It's the flow shoal."
"What about it?"
"It isn't there, Lord Granny. It's entirely gone."
Several hours and a number of semi-frantic meetings later, Granny returned to the hospital and to the Count of Claremont's room.
"Oh, good, you're back," Claremont said.
He pointed at the Imperial Marines.
"I've been told I'm fine, and they're going to release me now. They're about to hand me over to the local authorities, which I suppose are your people now. I'm going to jail, apparently."
"I need the room," Granny said to everyone who was not the Count. The room cleared out. Granny turned his attention back to Claremont.
"You knew about the flow?"
Claremont nodded.
It was possible that it hadn't collapsed yet when you sent along your report, in which case this would be a different conversation. For now, at least. But if it hadn't collapsed today, it would have been tomorrow or the next day, within a week, in any event. And we'd be having this conversation then.
If the flow stream collapsed, then you sent your son to his death.
No. I predicted this stream is collapsing from the entrance shoal. The exit shoal will be open for months yet. Not that it will matter. Nothing else can get into it. So, for all purposes, once the stream empties of ships currently in it, it's gone. Everyone who's on end will be here for the duration.
And how long is that? How long is the duration?
Why, Lord Grenny, that's forever, of course.
Grenny had nothing to say to this.
There is one thing, Claremont said.
What is it?
The flow stream out from end is closed. But I predict the flow stream to end will stay open for several years yet. It's already showing some signs of decay, but it should hold for a while. It might even be the last flow stream in the interdependency to collapse entirely.
What does that mean? Grenny asked.
It means we should be getting ready for visitors.
Visitors?
Yes.
How many?
As many who can make it here alive, I expect, Claremont said, and then clapped his hands together. Now, Lord Grenny, you're a murderer and a usurper, and you tried to hurt my son. In a perfect world, you'd be dead or rotting in jail for what you've been doing for the last few years. Either option would be fine by me. But right now, for better or worse, you're the Duke of End. I suppose now that you're Duke, you've magically found a way to end the rebellion, yes?
Grenny nodded.
Which means you are actively involved in the rebellion in some horribly duplicitous way, yes?
Grenny gave a full-body shrug to this.
That's what I thought. Regardless, now we're at peace, which we're going to need for what comes next. And you, alas, are instrumental in keeping it. Which means that getting rid of you at this point would cause even more problems than it would solve. I could try arguing the point. I suppose I could contact Serontane and make a fuss. But now that you know about the flow stream collapse, you know we have bigger problems on our hands than rebellions and coups. So I'm going to offer you my support.
Really? Grenny blinked at this. With all due respect, sir, I think you're misjudging who needs whose support.
I'm not. You have some decisions to make that will decide whether humanity, the part of it here now and the parts of it to come, survive the collapse. You're ambitious, and you're greedy, and you clearly were part of some larger plan by your house to take control of the interdependency. Good.
Good?
That last part, yes. It means your ambition and greed are in service for something more than just yourself. It means that you might be something other than just a grasping sociopath. That you might actually care about the interdependency and the people in it and what happens to them. If you do, or if at the very least you can learn to, then I'm here to help you. If you don't, you might as well have those Marines on the other side of the door shoot me now. At this point, it's all the same to me. But if you are going to use me, and you should, I have some terms and requests. Some things I need from you, so I can trust that there is more to you than the shallow, self-centered hustler you've been up to this point. I need to believe you might actually be able to save the world.
For the life of him, Grenny had nothing to say to any of this. It was literally like his tongue and brain, his two advantages, had simply shriveled up and blown away.
Claremont peered at Grenny closely. You didn't think this was how it was going to go, did you? Being Duke? Getting everything you planned for?
Grenny opened his mouth to respond and croaked. He swallowed, embarrassed, and tried again. No, he said.
Well, surprise then, Lord Grenny, Claremont said. And now, tell me, what's it going to be? Are you going to use me or not?
Part 3. Chapter 13. Less than 10 minutes after Yes Sir, That's My Baby emerged out of the flow in the Hub system and began its 37-hour real space trip to Hub's Imperial Station, a bomb went off in the entertainment district of the city of Chadwick on Hub. The bomb had been placed in a restaurant and went off just after the lunch rush, killing 10 people in the restaurant, 2 people on the street outside. The restaurant itself was gutted. The response was quick. Automated fire suppression units sprang from their hidey holes to minimize that threat. The public air systems in that area switched over to particulate filtering mode to keep the air breathable for the immediate environment. The massive doors to that section of Chadwick, so rarely activated, ground closed in order to seal off the spread of any possible conflagration, the damage of which would be horrifying in that enclosed underground environment. Transport tubes in and out of Chadwick were shut down and physically sealed off. Until local and imperial authorities reopened the tubes, the only way in or out of Chadwick would be over land in hard vacuum. But even the access tunnels to the surface were closed off and policed. Not that it mattered. They've looked at the security cameras for the week prior to the bombing, both from the restaurant and on the streets around it, said Jivin Lobland, the imperial investigator at the scene, in video piped into the executive committee's meeting room at the Imperial Palace 3 hours after the bombing. There's nothing. No drops, nothing left behind by a customer, no suspicious activity. We've identified all the patrons and staff who ate or worked there, and we're working through them, starting with the ones with criminal records. So far, all of them have come up clean.
So how did the bomb get in there?
Asked Upeksha Ranatunga, representing Parliament.
We're looking into it. What video we have shows the explosion originating in the back of the restaurant in the storage areas. We have the forensics people in there now.
If it went off in the storage areas, then it might be something that was delivered,
Archbishop Corbine said,
in which case it could have been something that had been sitting there for days or weeks.
Yes, Your Grace, Lobland agreed. We've got investigators looking through delivery records. We'll find it.
Has anyone claimed responsibility? Cardinia asked.
No, Your Majesty. Not yet. We're monitoring communications planet-wide. When we know, you will know.
Cardinia nodded and motioned for the feed to be cut.
I think we know who this is, a voice said down the table.
Cardinia looked up and saw Nadashe Nohamapitan, the most recently installed member of the executive committee. She had replaced Saman Temaminon, who, unfortunately, had to go and die on Cardinia, opening up the slot. Cardinia regretted Temaminon's death on several levels.
You're going to say the end separatists, Cardinia said.
It's the fourth bombing in the last 2 months on Hub, Nadashe said. All with basically the same modus operandi. We have reports of similar activity in 3 other systems as well, all of which began after news of your coronation and the bombing of it reached those systems.
They could be copycats, Ranatunga said,
and we apprehended the coronation bombers.
We killed the coronation bombers, Corbine amended. Alleged coronation bombers, Cardinia added. The 2 alleged bombers had indeed originated out of End, but otherwise very little was known about them, except that they blew themselves up with a small bomb just before Imperial forces slammed down their door, and that the apartment they were found in on Hub had physical evidence linking them to the coronation bombing.
We killed 2 individuals,
Nadashe said.
We don't know if we got rid of their whole cell or network.
What do you suggest we do, Lady Nadashe?
Corbine asked.
Other than what we're already doing, which is substantial. Archbishop, I agree that our local and imperial investigators are doing everything they can. The problem isn't here. It's on End. It's time for the interdependency to step in and take control of the planet and snip out the rebellion there.
As you've said before, and as you've had your members of parliament suggest, Ranatunga said. It's not only the MPs from Tir Hatun who believe this, Minister Ranatunga.
When I said your members of parliament, I wasn't referring to just the ones from your home system, Lady Nadashe. I was also referring